Jensen Watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 Watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 3rd of February, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. It's news, views, stuff you can use, and yes, the return of Mr. Rob Linton, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, he's not saying much.
Who spent the week on the boat.
I expected a bigger tan on him, or a darker tan on him.
That's
I've already been back for a week. Look what I had to come back to.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah, that makes a tan go away.
You couldn't wait to
come
back.
Can't go that fast.
I was a lobster.
What were you doing?
I was a
in your dream?
I was a lobster while I was on board that ship. I got scorched.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're allowed to come indoors sometimes, you know.
Yeah, well, this doesn't happen.
Below
there's no bikinis there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, welcome back.
Oh, I just had a horrible picture of Rob in a bikini.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, it'll be on the forums before the end of
it'll
the day,
be on
I'm
the
sure.
Board.
I saw that on YouTube.
Yeah, right,
why'd
we'll
you have
that.
To go and say that?
pictures.
Yeah, let's start with the MacBook Air. MacBook Air users might need to move their new ultra-thin laptops to keep... Hi, how are you?
Here, say it again.
MacBook Air users might need to move their new ultra-thin laptops to keep bits moving to and fro, Apple said in a note on its support site. Just one of several problems posted now that the new portable has started shipping. Among the documents that populate the MacBook Air support section Apple unveiled this week for its newest laptop was one that outlined an issue between the Air and some external monitors. If your MacBook Air is closed and an external display is your only display, you may notice a reduction of throughput for wireless networks that use the 2.4 gigahertz band, Apple said. To fix the problem and get throughput back on track, Apple recommends that users try another channel on the wireless access point, switch frequency ranges, or move the MacBook Air closer to the base station. Other MacBook Air wireless issues, according to Apple, involve slow speeds when connected to multiple Bluetooth devices and bulky routers that refuse to work the remote disk magic. For the latter, Apple suggests users update the firmware of their non-Apple 802.11n routers to get disk sharing operational. Or, of course, just throw all your stuff out and buy everything from Apple. Apple also confirmed that MacBook Air users who want to install XP or Vista in a bootcamp partition must have the external USB optical drive, like the $99 SuperDrive the company sells. Windows can't be installed using the remote disk CD-DVD sharing software bundled with MacBook Air, according to Apple. Be sure to connect your external USB optical drive to your MacBook Air before starting the Bootcamp Assistant. Other FYIs include a note that some headphones won't properly jack into the MacBook Air because of the notebook's nearly hidden audio outport. Some third-party products, such as headphones, may not plug into the MacBook Air headphone jack because part of the connector does not fit within the port hatch, Apple admitted. Use a third-party headphone adapter to extend the audio connection outside of the port hatch. Adapters are available, surprisingly enough, at the Apple Store. So the point here, of course, is you don't get USB. You do get USB. You don't get an Ethernet port. You have to buy...
Well, the Ethernet port is optional.
You have to,
because most laptop users are using wireless anyway, so it's the different sacrifices that Apple made, and during the introduction, he was comparing it with one of the Sony Vaios, and several of the magazines have done really detailed comparisons about what each company gave up. Sony comes with all of the ports, it comes with a built-in optical drive, it comes with all the hardware, but it's only an 11-inch screen, and it's a compressed keyboard, and it's $2,500 minimum. With the Apple, you're getting a nearly full-size keyboard, a 13-inch screen, and it's only $1,800, but you don't get all the ports. And one of the issues has always been that on the Mac side, they don't have all the slots and ports that the PCs do most of the time because the stuff is built in and you don't need those ports. So you've got wireless built in. You probably don't need Ethernet. And if you do, there's an option to buy it.
Well, but so far, all the ads I've seen the only thing they talk about is how thin it is.
Right, how thin it is. It's a little wider than the old 12-inch. It seems to me, though,
if you're going to buy something that's so super thin, and then you need to buy 50 dongles to connect everything and lug those around with you, what have you gained?
Most people don't connect to those things as part of the thing. But you know, the thing about boot camp, you're requiring an external USB drive. Well, yeah, you can't install Windows without putting the CD somewhere.
Right. So but you can't put it in the disk sharing thing. It doesn't work through disk sharing.
Because you have to boot that disk.
Right.
And you can't boot it off of a network.
Right. And what if you use Parallels?
Well, then you can use it internally with the external drive when you connect. So it's sort of, and what we see a lot of people using is when you carry the computer with you, it's mostly designed for road warriors who are on the road all the time and want something as small and light as possible. And it's still lighter than the Sony they compared it against too. And then when you get back to your office, you plug in your USB drive, you plug in your bigger monitor, you plug in all that extra stuff back at the office. But having a 3-pound box to carry with you and even a full sized a small computer is 6 pounds. It doesn't sound like a big difference, but when it's on your shoulder all day long, yeah, running between airport gates,
I will say, however, that because you cannot change the battery as a road warrior, I really don't like
changeable.
That. Well, but the point
is, there's only 19 screws.
The point is, I'm working away. When I carry my laptop around, I carry an extra battery.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to take out 19 screws, pull the thing apart, take out the battery, put in a battery, put in 19 screws, and then go back to my meeting. It's just not going to happen. Whereas if I had the ability to carry an extra, it doesn't make it useful to me all day long.
Right.
And that's the thing I object to. I can buy 2 extra batteries for the machine I've got, and in between meetings, swap them back and forth.
Yep.
And I win. Here, I can't do any of that, and I don't like that at all.
We'll all see right. External power adapters. Adapter works, too, when you're on an airport. But then again, it's something more you might have to carry.
Right. All right. Our next caller is... Our first caller is...
Which is our next caller.
Bill from Bushnell's Basin. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Hey, Bill. This is Bill. I have a PC that I had a motherboard fried last fall, and Dave repaired it. It's been running fine, but the last month I've occasionally had a random occurrence where right in the middle of something the screen would go completely black and the computer would then go into a reboot cycle. Yesterday I was in the second step of the security tango running in safe mode with the shredder going, and after about an hour or so I came back and looked at the screen and it had gone completely black, apparently started into the reboot cycle, and it was stuck on the screen that says Phoenix Award BIOS at the top, and at the bottom it says press F8 F9 delete. And now when I turn it off and restart it, that screen comes up immediately. The light on my keyboard flashes. You hear a sound out of the sound. And then it goes black. And then a few seconds later, that screen comes back up and the system is totally locked. Can't do anything with it.
Sounds like you might have gotten fried.
Again?
Yeah, I mean, with the storms and that blew through here this past week, I've had a number of computers got popped, because even right at my own house, I had the power go out. It only went out for a few seconds, but it was enough to be annoying and reset all the digital clocks, so they're sitting there flashing. Okay. And we've had at least 6 systems in that the power supplies or systems blew.
Well, I don't want to kind of give you a commercial, but what time do you open in the morning? I'll be there.
We're open Monday at 9 o'clock.
I'll be there.
Okay, in general, folks, for those of you who are listening, really in any area where you have thunderstorms this severe summer or storms this severe in the winter.
That windstorm, I mean, everybody knew that power might go out because...
Yeah, you really need to have an uninterruptible power supply.
And they aren't that expensive anymore.
Yeah, I do have an APC, a big power supply, and I actually had turned the power off at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had shut the computer down and turned it off. I have an APC 1500, mm-hmm. I think it is. It's a big one.
Yeah. Like I said, bring it in tomorrow.
I'll bring it in.
Okay. See you then, Bill.
Yeah.
Okay, sir.
Yeah, you can get an uninterruptible power supply or UPS. APC is just one of the biggest brands. Starting at $30, $40 if you only want 5 minutes of battery life, which is all you need to shut down normally.
Well, and you gotta remember there's really two kinds. There's the kind that runs off of the wall plug and then cuts in the battery. Then there's the kind that always runs off the battery and constantly recharges the battery through the wall plug. That's the kind you really want.
Which are a little more expensive.
They're a little more expensive, but they are better for you for two reasons. One is you'll never notice a power fluctuation ever. And secondly, a battery could take a massive surge and not even notice it. In fact, it's just, thanks, more power. Give it to me.
Steve, I had a client that says, oh, no, we don't get any surges or anything else. Hey, couldn't have been that. We went to this plant, pulled the cover off.
Melted.
No, you look in there by the process. We're just kind of quick taking a look at it. And there was a line of 8 capacitors.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how they had that little X on the top,
the X,
silver X?
Swollen?
No, 5 out of the 8 had popped.
Popped
they
open
were
completely.
Already
wow.
Popped open and were burnt over.
Well, there was an issue. It's been huge in the electronics industry that the X capacitors, there was a manufacturing problem a few years ago. And we see a lot of motherboards where they're blowing by themselves.
Oh, this one. Yeah.
And then,
five out of the eight.
The K's, and, yeah, the K's and the Y's are good, but the X's seem to have problems. But yeah, so if you live in an older house or an apartment building, and if you notice the lights dim when the refrigerator kicks on or things like that, you've got bad power. Mm-hmm. And it's really bad on the computer.
Should have a UPS.
Or if, in fact, they're just simply saying there will be thunderstorms tonight or there will be high wind storms tonight.
A lot of people put too much stock in a surge suppressor. You know, you buy the $5 thing at the superstore. The surges are an extremely minor occurrence. The bigger problem is brownouts and overvolts that don't count as a surge. You know, your power drops a little bit and then it goes back to normal. Or slightly above normal without actually being a surge.
Well, and even those $5 strips.
Yeah, they work once.
They work once, and people try to turn them back on. They'll turn back on.
Yeah, if it melts closed and completes the circuit. Then
you protected that once, but thereafter, you're not.
Yeah. I have to admit, my wife and daughter got very upset when I told them they had to turn their machines off during the storm, and I didn't, because mine's the one on the UPS.
You're going to be ordering UPSs?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's. I think the next thing is more UPSs.
So. The last big storm we had a few months ago at our store, our server's on the UPS, which is great. But then we don't have any cash registers on the UPS. So people tried to buy stuff and the cash registers wouldn't work. Uh-oh. The server's fine. And
So you did a little rethinking on the way things are wired.
Speaking of the way things are wired, Bill had mentioned that he turned his computer off, and even though he was connected to the UPS, he had the problem. Well, when you turn that computer off, you're opening one line of your electrical circuit.
Right.
He may have had a surge come in on the other line. So the real failsafe is to, the real safety measure is to unplug the thing.
Right. Actually, get it off the grid.
When you turn your computer off, or pretty much any electronic device these days, it's still receiving power. There's a trickle voltage, so it can turn on faster. Yeah. If you're old enough to remember the days when it took 5 minutes for your TV to turn on, because it had to warm up all those
tubes.
Yep. So even when it's turned off, it's still powered and connected to the grid. And a lot of times you'll see the little light on your power supply showing you the power is still coming in. So physically unplug it.
Right. If there's a light anywhere on any of your electrical devices, that's a clue that power is actually running into the device. And it's not just the power plug. Unplug your modem cable or your Ethernet cable or, any wire running to your computer can be the conduit for an electrical surge.
We often see fried motherboards with a blown Ethernet port because the power problem came in over the coax line or the telephone line through their internet router and then into the Ethernet on their computer.
Right. All right. I think we've got time for another call. Our next call is Gene on a cell phone. Welcome, Gene. What's your question?
Guys, how you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, I've got an issue with Vista.
That's an understatement.
It is an understatement. Anyways, I loaded it up on a Toshiba laptop that I've got, and I have a D-Link wireless router that works fine with all my wireless computers and anyone who comes to visit my house. I put in the security,
mm-hmm.
And the hook's right up. This machine doesn't want to connect to my network. And I don't know if there was anything special about, you know, Vista's OS. I don't see anything
it's
really
Vista
different.
It's Vista security. It won't connect anywhere unless you really, really, really tell it to.
Yeah.
Right. Do you have, dig down what in version there. Of Vista are you running?
Home Basic.
Ooh. That, Home Basic doesn't have networking in it, does it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It,
yeah, but it's very...
Well, I mean, I configure my SSID and all my settings, but just refuses to connect.
You got the firewall turned off in Vista?
No. I have UAC disabled, but...
No, turn off your firewall.
Turn off their firewall,
because
they went overboard. You know how they... wanted to make sure it was secure and how it nags you constantly to, oh, do you want to allow this? Do you want to allow this? Do you want to allow this? Shut up. Just let it go.
Shut it off and see what happens. That's probably what's causing it. Yeah. We have to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 22 minutes after the hour, Soundbites 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. sorry, I'm full up. I think my sinuses, my allergies, something.
Oh, it's the worst time of year right now.
Hey, here's something exciting. A new Italian law that was supposed to allow users, was supposed to severely limit their ability to share low-quality music over the Internet has severely backfired. Here's the problematic paragraph, and I loosely translate this, by the way. Publication of images and music is permitted free of charge through the Internet, provided that the file is low resolution or degraded for scientific or educational use, and only when such use is not for profit. Now, the problem is with that word degraded. The people who wrote that don't realize that degraded has a very precise technical meaning, which fully and completely encompasses MP3 files. That means that Italians will be able to legally share MP3 files over the Internet without fear of legal reprisal. There is another paragraph that says you can't publish MP3s that are copyrighted, but that paragraph is trumped by the earlier paragraph. All that a person has to do is publish someone's entire discography for comparison or contrast, or invite comments about the relative merits of the music on the site, or provide the files for some sort of data analysis of, say, melodic sequences, and then it would be perfectly legal to put all the music you want online. Absolutely.
You were born to be an Italian lawyer, Nick.
Thank you. Thank you. It is in my heritage. If you can't get them with law, bring a shotgun, but we try the law first. Now, before all you music thieves out there start drooling, you should be aware that the minute one of those files hits a U.S. network, it's covered by U.S. laws, as near as I've been told. So this new law only declares open season for Italians. Sorry. However, it's a lovely template to try to push through your own Congress.
There was, I'm trying to find it now. There was an article published. It was one of the CNET guys who interviewed a spokesman from the RIAA about their campus plan. About mm-hmm. They send out thousands of cease and desist notices to campuses, you know, asking for the names of the people at these IP addresses, and then giving the students a website where they can voluntarily submit to a fine before they go to court.
Right, because this whole RIA thing has not yet been tried in court.
Right.
It could be that it'll be thrown out on its little derriere.
So Don Reisinger at CNET actually got an interview with a real RIAA spokesperson, and they are completely whacked out of their gourds.
They're nuts.
They have no idea what's really going on. And so he posted an article about it, and then the next day he posted the transcript of the interview, because people were saying, well, they can't have meant that. You were taking that out of context. No, he wasn't.
Yep.
I'm going to post those links on our
link list.
Yeah,
the RIAA and the MPAA basically are both bat guano crazy. There's no question of that. But that's, you know, that's what they do, and that's their business, and we just have to live with it until somebody comes to their senses.
And he kept asking them, well, why don't you go after the people that are really stealing the music, you know, and not just the, you know, the easy target, since, oh, we are. Our preference, first and foremost, is to take action against the services themselves that facilitate the illegal downloading and distribution of copyright works.
But if they go after them, they have to actually go to court.
Yeah.
If they go after you, chances are you'll settle.
Yep.
They're making money hand over fist from people who are too afraid to sue them.
Do you think the policy of lawsuits work? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Since the beginning of this initiative, we've seen a P2P problem that was once growing at dizzying speeds essentially flatten out. People aren't stealing music anymore.
Yeah, right. And I got some swamp land for you, too.
Flatten out doesn't mean they're not stealing it. Flatten out means everybody who can already is.
Yep.
All right, our next caller is Pat from Shalott, New York. Welcome, Pat. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. Basically, I'll give you the symptom. I start my computer up, and I get a black screen and a beep about every 5 seconds. And that's it.
Can you so the light stays orange?
Which light would that be?
The light on the monitor?
Yes.
Can you say a blown motherboard?
That's two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I listened to the first caller with the power surges and all that, and that's kind of what I was thinking.
Eeper, you two get to buy a new PC. Come on down.
Does that mean, you can't replace any of the parts, or everything's
depends.
Fried?
It depends on how much damage is done, and it would be a matter of taking the components out and testing them on another machine to see what's good and what's not. Be honest with you, if the motherboard was gone, I'd at least replace the motherboard and CPU.
Okay.
And those are the two things that usually take the biggest hit.
And oftentimes, that's two-thirds of the cost of a new computer.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. That's what
You're really hoping for is the hard drive is still good.
Right.
Which in most cases
is. But of course you have backups.
Yeah, right.
Oh, stay tuned to the story hour.
Oh, here we go. Exactly.
We got a doubleheader this week, folks.
All right. Well, I appreciate your help. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Sorry I didn't have better news, but.
Yeah, technically that means that the computer isn't putting out a video signal, so the monitor stays in sleep mode because there's no video signal.
Yep, doesn't do any of the post.
Yep.
Right.
Post.
All right, our next caller is Roger from Greece, New York. Welcome, Roger. What's your question?
Hello?
Hi.
Yes, my daughter has been using Codex EasyShare. She had it on a 98 machine, recently bought a new machine with Vista, which she upgraded to XP and put EasyShare on it. We moved the pictures over, but she's got four kids, so she's captioned them for years with who's in the pictures. Codex says there's no way to move all those captions.
The better way to,
how did she caption them?
Right in EasyShare. There's a way you can put captions in under the pictures, but when you create a new version of EasyShare on a new computer, you can move the images, but you can't move the captions according to Codex.
Tell her to try Picasa.
Will that read the EasyShare captions?
I think the newer version of Picasa, I think, might read the captions.
It depends if that caption is embedded in the metadata of the file or if it's a separate file that EasyShare linking. You might try the old version of EasyShare and hope that works on the new computer.
Yeah. Okay.
So theoretically, the old EasyShare should read the old EasyShare.
Should. I'm not a fan of EasyShare.
She isn't anymore.
Yeah. I've gotten to Picasa. I love Picasa because you can sit there and create a slideshow. You can do so much with it. I think it makes life a little bit easier. And it's free.
Sounds like something worth trying.
You don't have anything
there
to do.
There is, by the way, a menu choice, send a suggestion to Kodak. You might not that kind of suggestion.
He talked to him several times and has given up on him. We're hoping somebody out there has figured out.
I'm Googling around, and
maybe
it's apparently a common problem with captions.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like their solution was, and I had a fit with them one time. I put in a new DVD burner for a client, and then the EasyShare wouldn't read. They go, well, you got to get these drivers. And the whole list of Kodak drivers for CD burners was so old, they hadn't updated it. And it's like, hello, those drives haven't been available for over 9 months. Yeah. You better update and get new drivers.
Oh, well, we're working on that.
Shouldn't EasyShare just read the Windows driver and read it off the disk?
Why should it need its own driver? Right.
You said the key word.
Should.
Should.
Yeah.
Right. It's like going back to the old days where every word processor had their own set of drivers. Every spreadsheet had their own set of drivers. Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous. Anyhow, I'm sorry we don't have a better answer for you, Roger, but That's the software. That's a life. Our next caller is Colleen from Albion, New York. Welcome, Colleen. What's your question?
Well, it seems a little repetitive. I should have been listening all morning, I guess. After a prolonged brownout the other day where I couldn't get to my computer in time to undo the power, ever since then it will be on and then it'll freeze. And then the only way to do anything with it is to shut off the power. When I turn the power back on, the first 2 or 5 or 10 times, the little orange light stays on and there's a really loud whirring sound. And then ultimately, if I do it enough times, it'll kick in, boot up, everything will be okay till it freezes again, and it's doing it more frequently.
Well, that's three.
Yeah, there's three.
I'm sorry, Colleen.
If you're lucky, and to the previous callers too, if you're lucky, it's just the power supply.
Yeah,
because that's right. The cheapest part to replace.
You need to test it out.
Okay, to see if it's just the power
supply.
Right. Bring it to your friendly neighborhood computer dealer and let them test it out.
All right.
Sorry.
Thanks very much.
They must have had that problem here because in the break room next to the garbage is a stack of empty power supply boxes.
I went through
like 5 or 6 empty boxes.
I went through a number of them this week.
Yeah, I hate to say that, but there you are. Our next caller, Don from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Don. What's your question?
Yeah, good morning. I created a PowerPoint slideshow in Office 2007, and what it is a video show for a music camp that a guy puts on during the summertime.
Yeah.
This is like a virtual tour for people who are thinking about attending the camp. I saved it so that it could be used in an earlier version of PowerPoint.
Right.
And it took a 5.9 meg file and upped it to a 65 meg file.
Yep.
Is there any way I can save this as a smaller file?
There are a couple of utilities to compress PowerPoint. I don't know if they work on video.
Yeah, that's the problem, is the video.
Well, these are all still pictures. All still photos.
Now, I know that in the old version of PowerPoint, there are steps that will let you shrink the pictures. When you see that little icon bar for picture, when you point to a picture, a little icon bar pops up.
Okay.
There's one that actually says compress pictures.
It's in the format dialog box under the pictures tab.
Right.
Another question I have is, if I can get this down to this guy, can he run this PowerPoint thing from his server out to people that want to view it, or does he have?
You mean over the web?
Yeah.
There are
not at 60 megs.
Yeah, no.
No, how about if it's a 6 meg? For the Office 2007.
Right. Well, there's two ways to do that. People can download it and run it.
Yeah.
And there are programs that will let you, I think PowerPoint itself will do it.
The PowerPoint viewer you can download free from Microsoft.
Right, whether you have PowerPoint or not. But also, I believe there is a save as web document under the file in PowerPoint. Okay. And it saves it as a series of web pages.
Okay.
Which you then load onto your server, and you can move back and forth among them.
Okay. All right, I'll try those then.
I think that's built into 2007.
I think it's been built in for a while, because I frequently see the PPS files, the PowerPoint slideshow.
I know it was built into the old version.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's built into 2007. I haven't played enough with the PowerPoint. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You are listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. Hey, it seems that Microsoft is already giving up on Vista, and it's setting up business users.
Like everyone else.
Exactly, and it's setting up business users to switch from XP to Windows 7. Technically, Vista is pure misery. It eats system resources like an elephant does peanuts. Windows applications break, and its so-called improved security is a joke. I know it, you know it, even Microsoft's devoted yes men know it, although they won't admit it. And perhaps Microsoft knows it as well. What else can explain why Microsoft is now leaking news about Windows 7, the next version of Windows? So officially, SP1 is still the big upcoming news, although most businesses are actually more interested in SP3, the Service Pack 3 for XP. The simple truth is, no matter how Microsoft and its partners like CDW spin it, Vista is not being picked up by corporate users. Even Bill Gates' vaunted 100 million Vista users number must be taken with a large, very large grain of salt. Most of the information is dripping out of the blog Shipping 7, but it's more than just Shipping 7, which may or may not be real. Microsoft is hard at work, harder than one would expect with Vista just over a year old, in getting its next desktop operating system ready for action. As directions on Microsoft analyst Michael Cherry recently said, I don't think Vista's as bad as Microsoft has convinced people it is. I don't think Vista is as bad as Microsoft has convinced people it is. Cherry recommends that Microsoft discuss the next version of the operating system, currently referred to as Windows 7, and what it will do. Do you think Vista missed its shot? I mean, it's one thing to drop copies of Vista Home Basic and Premium on Best Buy customers who don't know any better. It's another thing entirely to get CIOs and IT managers to spend, or should I say waste, billions on Vista. For now, whether Microsoft likes it or not, Vista XP, not Vista, is the Windows which businesses will continue to use. And the companies that want to move on to a truly better operating system, well, they'll be moving on to Linux or the Mac OS.
Did you notice, Nick, that announcement or that leak happened within days, if not hours, of Bill Gates retiring?
Yes.
Now, yes. I'm not drawing any conclusions here. I'm just noticing. It's an observation.
Yep. Vista is the Emmy of the 21st century.
Mm-hmm. So far.
So yep. far, exactly. Yep. Is the first Emmy of the 21st century.
All right, our next... You might get me going on that one.
I still can't get used to these new glasses. Our next caller is Jeff from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
Hi. I have a comment and a question. Sure. First, the number two motherboard, that blue, you might want to check to make sure the RAM is seated properly.
There's that. Now, hold on a second, Jeff. That, in general, is a good point. A lot of times we move our machines here and there, whatever. When we do that, before we turn them back on, in fact, possibly, well, plug them in first. Don't turn them on. Then take the cover off and push down on all the components. Make sure all the boards are seated correctly.
Just after years, time of heating and cooling, they can work their way loose, too.
Right, but not so much the new DDRs because of the way they snap in. You've got those two ends that hold it in.
Well, but I'm thinking also of boards.
Oh, yeah. Boards.
In the back,
I would
if
say
they're not
boards.
Screwed down.
Yeah, boards more so yep. than memory.
Excellent point, Jeff. Yep. What's your question?
It wouldn't hurt to check. It takes, 2 seconds?
And, and your comment about this leak from Microsoft. So, those of us that have or may have Vista on laptops or whatever, can those laptops then have XP installed on them or 7, this new operating system?
Yeah, see, that's where Microsoft is making out. They turn around and charge you to buy a copy of XP.
Well, and the other issue, too, is that some of the newest computers that will come with Vista may not have XP drivers for their devices.
Right.
So you probably can load XP on them.
I haven't found too many that haven't yet, and I've done at least... a couple dozen.
Right. If you stick with the more common, more generic brands, you should be fine.
Yeah, I sent you guys an email this week. I've got a customer looking for a new machine to run NT because he doesn't want to pay a fortune to upgrade his access databases.
Right. And I believe I shouldn't say.
Well, I loaded it on Parallels on my Mac, and it seemed to go okay.
Yeah.
It's a running NT on my Mac now.
So they're shipping 7, you said, the operating system.
No. They're talking about the future version 7. Oh, and the blog is called Shipping 7.
Oh, okay.
And it's about the what they're going through to get 7 to the shipping point.
All right. Well, thank you.
There you go.
So that means that Windows Vista is 6?
Yeah.
Well, see, there was NT4, and then NT5 turned into Windows 95, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So then what was XP?
What was 98? What was 98 SE?
Yeah.
What was ME?
Well, see, it was the end NT path and then the classic path.
Well, the thing is...
The classic path died with ME, and maybe NT5 turned into XP.
Well, it's not so much the version of Windows as the base that it uses is what they... Yeah. Right? And Windows 6, the NT base is NT 2000... to all the 2000s, XP, Vista, that all uses the same base, so that's NT6. That's Windows 6. So theoretically, Windows 7 is a whole new base, which wouldn't be a bad idea. That's all I have to say about that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Reich, Chris Reich, Rob Linton. We'll have the appearance of Uncle Dave. I know that's all you've all been waiting for. It is 49 minutes. Oh, I'm Nick Francesco. 49 minutes after the hour. Soundbites 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Inner.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, sit back, everybody. Here's your chance. Go get your footy jammies on. Grab a mug of hot cocoa. Sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. If we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
You ready for two of them?
Uh-oh. Strap your...
Can you handle two of them?
It's going to be a bumpy ride.
All right. First off, it was my first week back from being away.
Sure.
So I was kind of primed.
Sure.
Busy week. But you know what? Some harebrained idiot sits there, makes an appointment. Now, I get in my buggy, which doesn't run on water, drive all the way over to this client. I get greeted at the door. What do you want? I says, I'm here to work on your computer. What? I says, you called yesterday, want an appointment. I turned it on.
One day response? That's a hell of a thing.
That's pretty astonishing.
I was there, she goes, well, I turned it on and it fixed itself. And how am I supposed to, the H, know? Hello, your computer doesn't call up my computer and say, I'm fixed. You got to pick up the phone, hair brawl. And, you know, let us know that I don't have to drive all the way over there. You know, it's called common courtesy. You know, if these folks, that one, and then I get another phone. Folks, do me a favor.
Send them a bill for the travel time.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm doing. Yeah. But you know how good that's going to go over.
Yeah.
Then the other one, like I say, it was a great week, right along with the ice storm and everything else. Folks, do me a favor. You talk to anybody overseas that's getting paid $1 an hour, asking for help, and they sit there and tell you, oh yeah, go ahead and do this, just put it in over this, and you don't back up,
you
know what? I'll supply you the gun, because you're sitting there shooting yourself in the foot. Anybody that will sit there and get on support, and they're about as helpful as a screen door in a submarine.
Well, they're following a script as part of the problem. That's why they can pay them so little.
Unbelievable. They're just sitting there and telling you, go. The minute they tell you, well, just put it over there, and you haven't backed up your data, and then you come into my shop and tell me, you know, well, I got to get it back. Where's your backup? Oh, I didn't have time to do it, but you got to do it. You know, well, let me try to do it. And, you know, I'm trying to walk them through things and that. And it's like, it's my fault, because some other tech support that they listen to, like I say, that's getting paid $1 of the hour, told them to go ahead and overwrite it. It'll be okay. They don't care. They're overseas. You think they're gonna go? You're going to go to their house?
They'll get Windows to work just fine.
Yeah, with a brand new machine, you know, totally wiped. Anytime you're going to take your data and do anything online, here's a clue. Say you're working with QuickBooks. You first go into the hard drive, find that folder. Create another folder. Call it QuickBooks Old. You copy all the contents in the current one over to the old one.
Well, I get
and then
that.
You this make way, a backup on a CD.
I get that all the time. Can you recover my documents? Where are they? I don't know. They're in QuickBooks. That's
you
the program.
Gotta,
where
if, you
did
know,
you
your
save
business
your file?
Is that
I don't know.
Important to you? I mean, for folks that are just, you know, doing letters and all that, oh, well, get over it. You can redo it. But if you're running a business for any length of time and you don't have backups, I have no sympathy for you.
And this, of course, is the general problem that people, that we all have with computers. Most people are not administrator types. They don't think like administrators. They don't act like administrators. And yet, they are administrators.
Exactly.
Every person who owns a computer is the administrator. You are responsible for doing backups. You are responsible for keeping the system clean. You are responsible for making sure that everything on that machine is precisely what and where it should be, and you should know that.
Folks, I'm here to help you, but you know, I can only lead you so far.
All righty. Time for Uncle Dave's shots. Multiple shots now. He really needs more than one there. Now, we're mellowed out now. Put away your footy jammies, rinse out your mugs, and we'll go back to there we go. Calm down, Uncle Dave. Calm down. There we go. All right. Hey, before we take a break, I got a minute or so. I want to. I got 10 seconds. All right, then. I guess we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with what?
Wait.
What is wrong with you? Are you? What drugs are you still on
from
your trip?
We've got 10 seconds until the minute.
Did you get sunstroke?
Yeah, we have 10 seconds until the minute
I realize
countdown.
This is your first radio show and all, Nick, but it was 10 seconds before the music.
All right, stop it. Shut up. All right. I just want to say Microsoft has some suggestions to make Vista run better.
Take the operating system
delete
off the computer.
Delete programs you don't use. Limit how many programs load at startup. Defrag your hard drive. Clean up your hard disk. Turn off visual effects. Add more memory. Check for viruses. Check your speed.
They're copying us. We've been saying that for a year.
Exactly.
It's a tangle.
It's actually on their website now as how to fix Vista. Stop running it the way they gave it to you is basically what they're saying.
They should just have a link to the Soundbites Tangle.
That's it. They should have a link to the Tangle. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the magnificent Chris Reich, who once again has volunteered his time and his talent to recording the show to put on the website. The mighty, mighty Rob Linton, who is back from his lovely vacation and just couldn't care less one way or the other. I'm Nick Francesco. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Now, every week, we do a poll. Last week's poll was about Apple patenting the ability to light something up by touching it. 232 of you voted, tying for number 272 on the all-time hit list. Thanks to each and every one of you. This week's poll was comes from a story in the newspaper. Microsoft on Friday went public with a $44.6 billion cash and stock bid to acquire Yahoo. In its response, Yahoo called the Microsoft bid unsolicited, but did not reject it. Microsoft's offer, which was contained in the letter to Yahoo's board, amounted to $31 a share, which represents a 62% premium over Yahoo's closing price on Thursday. Microsoft said it will offer shareholders the option of cash or stock. We have great respect for Yahoo, and together we can offer an increasingly exciting set of solutions for consumers, publishers, and advertisers while becoming better positioned to compete in the online services market, Steve Ballmer said in a statement. Yahoo said in a responding statement that its board will evaluate this proposition carefully and promptly in the context of Yahoo's strategic plans and pursue the best course of action to maximize long-term value for shareholders. The deal comes at a time when Microsoft and Yahoo are both struggling to compete against Google. Microsoft did not mention Google by name in its announcement, but it did indicate that the acquisition bid was aimed squarely at its rival.
Wasn't the last offer only $1 billion?
Yes, they've gone up just a tad, $44.6 billion. So, our Soundbites poll of the week, should Microsoft be allowed to buy Yahoo? The choices are yes, no, who cares, we've got Google, and wait, Yahoo is still around? So far, we've got just about 94 votes. No is leading the pack, followed closely by who cares, we've got Google, followed by yes, and followed by wait, Yahoo is still around? Now, of course, once you're done putting in your poll choice, I know that's not enough for you people. You are long-winded. Not Uncle Dave long-winded, but long-winded. So underneath...
What'd you say?
Who woke him up? So underneath the poll, you'll see a little yellow box. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com. Beg pardon.
And you'll be able to put in an actual opinion up to 255 characters. So, and that should give you plenty of time to get burned through some of that vitriol if you're brief. Brevity being the soul of wit. While you're there, check out what I do. I put out a newsletter. I have a set of forums. If you're a member, you can search the old newsletters to find answers to your questions. That service alone is worth the $15 a year that I charge for this thing. When you're done with that, come on back to the Soundbites website and check out some of the wackiest people on the face of the earth in our forums. And that's what we do. So check that out. We're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Herb from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Herb. What's your question?
Hey, good morning. A brief pretext of this. A 7-year-old Sony laptop just failed to turn on.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter took it locally to a shop. They advised her to go and buy $125 or so external drive to extract her data. She wanted to retrieve her data and her pictures. Another victim not backing up, obviously. Mm-hmm. And when she purchased the item and went back to the place, they said they'd no longer get a turn on at all. So they tried one drastic measure, something like a direct connect, but they saw some smoking. So they said, end of story. I thought there was some surgical procedure. Somebody actually takes the board apart.
Yeah, usually we take the computer apart and pull the hard drive out and don't even bother.
You don't have to even pull the board. Usually a couple screws, the hard drive will come on out. You hook it up to an external unit.
He couldn't do that. He said he couldn't even do that. It started to smoke.
Well, you don't bother turning that computer on anymore.
Yeah, you take the hard drive out.
Pull the hard drive out and put it in another machine.
Unless it's the hard drive itself smoking.
But that shouldn't smoke.
I've seen burned chips on hard drive controllers.
Oh, yeah, I have too, but not as much as usually the motherboard will go before the hard drive will go.
And I have been able to pull the controller off the hard drive and find an equivalent model. And
I've done that a couple times.
There are ways around that. I have to say that I don't believe that whoever she took it to did their fullest possible measure.
I'm thinking that.
They might have done their fullest possible measure.
Well, they might not have. Well, like me, I've got two computers. To look at them, you'd sit there and say, those are computers? Because literally, motherboard exposed.
Just sitting on the table.
It's just sitting on a table that I designed, and I can test components out in the air. You know, literally, if I have to test a video card or a memory card or a chip or anything, the exposed board is right there. So I can hook up external drives and everything else.
Okay. Yeah, I suggested, wasn't there somebody, he said, well, there's a couple places in the country that can actually take it apart. It's quite expensive to extract that data and repeat.
Yes, but I don't know that it's you're that far along yet. If you were to bring it to Dave or Steve, they would be able to at least tell you whether the data are retrievable by normal means before you go that far.
Yeah,
extraordinary means, spacesuits and clean rooms, then you're talking several thousand dollars.
Oh, so it is that expensive.
Well, but if it doesn't take extraordinary means, if you can just pull the hard drive out.
Put it in. I do that for the Patty at the Siemens Group a lot.
There must be something in the air. I've got two machines running at the office now. They've been running a week, and they're still scavenging data, and I got two more to run. I only have two recovery benches, and it's usually enough. Yep. So I've got four dead hard drives at the moment.
Yep.
But bring them to Steve or Dave, and either one of them should be able to tell you whether or not the data are retrievable without going to that sort of expense. Okie doke?
He's gone.
All right. Thank you, Herb. Our next caller is Chris from Lindenville, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Where's Lindenville?
Yes, Joe. Lindenville is about 45 minutes from Rochester.
In what direction?
Northwest. Actually, if you take the parkway, you can take it straight down to Lindenville.
Oh, okay. All right. Cool.
Well, actually, guys, I'm one of these folks that got stuck buying a Vista PC that doesn't have XP drivers.
Uh-huh.
Wondering if you guys have any ideas on where I can collect drivers, or if I'm just stuck.
You have to go to the manufacturer
of that laptop.
Maybe not the laptop, maybe the subcomponents. If you're looking for a video card driver, then the video card manufacturer.
Yeah, but for a laptop, that's usually all on...
Is it a laptop?
No, it's a compact desktop.
Oh, okay. Then I saw
it. You know, I went to the manufacturer. It was the scripting thing like you guys were talking about. They direct you right to their site, and it's just a complete Vista driver package. So it was no use. But if I go to the actual hardware manufacturers, would they have something like that?
They absolutely might. That's the point. You know, you go to the manufacturer, each component of the system.
Yeah.
Let's say you've got a Sound Blaster video card. Then you go to Creative and get the driver from that.
You've got to go to NVIDIA.
Right. The trick is knowing exactly what model card is in that computer. If it's not listed in that much detail on your specification sheet, then you usually can pull the cover off and look for model numbers on the card itself.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I actually downgraded to XP a while back. I had gotten the driver package, and I have a laptop, too, so I just figured whatever I needed, I'd download, burn the CD, and do it like that. There's like seven different things, so it'll be an adventure, but I'll do that, guys.
Thanks. There you go.
That's what I like to hear.
Have some fun.
All right, I'll do that. You guys have a great day.
Thanks.
You too. Yep. That's the key thing.
Chris and the Raiders of the Lost XP drivers. There
the
you
thing
go.
Is, dun, 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 while Chris is still listening, I would tell him to take all those drivers and burn them off to CD just in case something else happens. You know,
he's always got them there.
Yeah, you always got them. You can.
And unfortunately, now he has to start checking periodically to see if new versions of those drivers have come out.
The big problem is going to be is if those components are OEM only and they may not offer drivers themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
But let's not jump off that bridge until we come to it.
There's a lot of variables.
All right, our next caller is Sharon from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Sharon. What's your question?
Hi, guys. First of all, I want to tell you I like your show. I enjoy it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Have an EMAC.
But I'm not liking what I see there on her.
Yeah, I see that. Go ahead.
What's that?
Well, go ahead. You've got an EMAC.
I have an EMAC, and there was a little bit of an accident the other night. Some milk had spilled on the keyboard, and I didn't realize it. My son apparently did it, and I didn't think he did too much damage to it. But as I was keying along, all of a sudden the spacebar, the whole bottom row, control, the option, the spacebar, and the numbers on the far right had frozen up. Well, I took some of the plastic tops off, popped them off, tried to get as much. It's a Lucite bottom. You can see, I could even, I was pouring it out. There might have been three tablespoons of liquid in there.
Wow.
Took the tops of the keyboards off, tried to dry it off, you know, disconnected it, put a blow dryer to it, hoping to save it. This morning, a few of the keys had come back, you know, but the space bar, I'm pretty much can't do anything with it. I can't, you know, so my question is, will it dry up? Will I be able to, or should it, if it's pretty much spent, am I going to have to get another keyboard? And if so, can I get any keyboard, or do I have to stay with Apple?
Yeah, Chris is recommending some WD-40. The milk,
really?
Milk dries a little weird. We've had a lot of problem with soda because it dries sticky, and it holds the keyboard down. Milk dries smelly.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can spray some cleaning solvent into it and then drop it out. I've also heard interesting stories about soak it in a dishpan overnight with let me finish.
Yep.
With a little bit of a dishwashing detergent. Then turn it upside down, let it dry for a month.
Yes.
Really?
Well, yeah. Now the mighty Ed Lattimore.
Is this the whole entire board I do this to?
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole keyboard.
Well, you unplug it from the computer.
Unplug it, obviously.
Yeah. The mighty Ed Lattimore used to do this when we worked together at the computer center. He was our tech, and I love Ed Lattimore. He used to have a bucket for keyboards, and he would, with us, a very mild cleaning solution in them. Leave stuff sitting in that for a day, a pan actually, so that the whole thing would be submerged. And then he would take it out, turn it upside down, and let it dry for actually a few days. I don't think it was a month, but he let it dry for a few days. You want one of those?
CYA.
Right. Yeah, a month and a half, maybe four. And he would use one of those dishwashers, dish detergents that advertises itself as rinsing clean.
Right.
So there's no residue.
Exactly.
And that often would work. The problem is if, and I don't know enough about the EMAC keyboard to tell you this, if the components are rustable, if there are any, you know, rustable components in there, you've got a problem.
Exactly.
But on the other hand, the thing doesn't work now.
Yeah, I don't have that. I mean, it's basically, I can't answer mail. I can't do anything.
Clean it off. Let it dry for a couple of days. If you want to take a hair dryer to it, that's a bad idea.
Because that can actually melt the plastic.
Exactly.
I've posted some pictures in our link list on how to take the keyboard farther apart, which can sometimes help. But a new USB keyboard isn't that expensive. It doesn't have to be an Apple keyboard. Any USB keyboard will work. There's just sometimes a difference between the Apple key and the Windows key.
Right. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, this is Soundbites. This is Soundbites. Sorry. Just watching the 300 again. All right.
Right. Have you seen Meet the Spartans?
No, nor do I want to.
Oh, that
what do they turn those out in 2 hours? Those movies?
Really? Well, no, but you get to see Kevin Sorbo in a loincloth again.
Oh, whoopee. All right.
I worry about you, Steve.
No, I'm going to inch away from Steve over at this end.
Yeah.
Well, now, there was an interview.
Don't break eye contact as you back off or I'll attack.
The fat, hairy guy that was naked in the Borat movie.
I know. I so don't
well,
care.
That's back when you were doing the movie reviews. You might have seen that. He plays Xerxes, so he's a fat, hairy guy in a loincloth.
There you go.
DMI.
I just need a mirror to see that. Software Watch Group has branded the two most...
Is the webcam on him?
Software.
Should I be hitting the beep beep button at this point?
You should have dumped the last 14 minutes. Software Watch Group. Welcome back, everybody. Software Watch Group has branded the two most recent versions of the Real Player Media program Badware because they don't give users adequate control over software components that are activated during installation. Real Networks, maker of the program, has pledged to fix the issue related to its most recent version and says a separate issue in the earlier version has already been corrected. StopBadware.org's objection with version 11 of the media program relates to the installation of a slimmed-down version of the Rhapsody player, which is needed to play songs from a subscription music service that just happens to also be owned by Real Networks. Thing is, when users uninstall Real Player, the Rhapsody software remains, and there's no easy way for the average Joe user to know that. We believe there is a strong responsibility on software producers that when user consents to install something, they know what they're consenting to, said Maxim Weinstein, manager of StopBadware.org. The failure to remove Rhapsody Player means now someone has a piece of software on the computer that they didn't know about. That, of course, has security implications. Given that security bugs are a fact of life, it's important that users know for sure what programs are on their machines. More fundamentally, it comes down to this bedrock principle. People have the right to know exactly what is installed in their machines and to have an easy means of removing it. Real Network spokesman Ryan Luckin, which rhymes with, issued a mea culpa, saying that the Real Player's failure to install the Rhapsody software was, and I quote, an oversight. He said engineers are working on an update that will fully remove the components. Apparently, they would rather be thought of as stupid than evil.
You really enjoyed that story, didn't you?
I loved that story. I just had to get to the guy.
You told it to remove Real Player. It did.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You didn't tell it to remove Rhapsody.
Right. Exactly right. All right. Our next caller is Rosie in Webster, New York. Welcome, Rosie. What's your question?
Mine is probably a ridiculous question to you guys,
nonsense.
But I have no idea how to do this. My start button used to be in the bottom right-hand corner of my computer screen.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's, I don't know how it happened, but it's in the upper right-hand corner, top corner.
Yeah, you just got to drag it down to the bottom, Rosie.
How do you do this?
It's not just the start button, it's that hold bar.
Right.
Click anywhere in the blank portion of the bar.
Right-click?
No, just click.
Okay.
Just got to make sure the lock is off.
Right. First right-click, you'll see a pop-up menu.
It is off.
Let's make sure of this. Right-click in a blank area of that bar. You'll see a pop-up. Make sure that lock the toolbar is off, is not checked.
It was not checked.
Good.
Okay, good.
Now, again, regular click, left click on anywhere on that toolbar that's blank and hold the mouse button down, then drag the whole thing to the bottom of the screen and let go.
Or actually, you could drag it to any corner you want.
It didn't work.
You have to click on a blank area of it, not on the start button, not on any other buttons, just on a blank area.
Which is what I did.
You just click and hold the mouse button down. Don't let go.
I didn't.
Hold the mouse button down, drag it to the bottom. Make sure you're all the way at the bottom. It should snap right down there.
Okay, now I did move it, but it's still not where I want. It's over on the left-hand side.
Right.
I want it across the bottom.
Now do it again, but make sure you drag it right to the middle of
the bottom of the screen.
To the what?
Middle of the bottom of the screen. And it should snap right there when it's where you want it to be.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. Now hold on, Rosie.
Yeah.
Right-click again on a blank spot. You'll see that pop-up menu. Click on lock the toolbar.
Then it won't move again.
Got it?
This is a fairly common thing.
There you go.
Don't feel too bad. When you went to click on one of the buttons on it, you accidentally dragged a little bit and it jumped.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely our pleasure, Rosie.
We see the same thing on the Mac side when you're clicking the icons in the dock. If you drag the icon, it removes it from the dock.
Right.
So if you hold the mouse down, a button down a fraction of a second too long, it thinks you're dragging it.
Right.
So you now, may want to go into your mouse sensitivity and change the sensitivity of the button.
Now, two things you need to know. If you have dragged that bar through the wrong place, you now know how to put it back. And secondly, if you drag something off of the docking bar in the Mac, it doesn't uninstall the program. It only removed it from the dock.
So you can go back to your applications folder and put it back.
And grab, again, left click and hold the mouse button down. Drag that application to where you want it on the toolbar. And once you see it there, let go. That'll put it back. In fact, you can do that with any application you want up to, I guess, the width of your screen.
Yeah. Well, they get smaller and smaller and smaller. Right, eventually,
eventually you won't be able to see them, yeah, but they'll all be there.
But then it scrolls left and right.
Right. All right, our next caller is Dave. It's Florida Dave. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I love your show.
Thank you.
Where
in Florida, by the way?
Yeah, Sanford, Florida.
Sanford?
Yeah.
Where's Sanford, Florida?
It's just a little bit northeast of Orlando.
Ah, well.
Cool.
The enchanted land. What's your question,
yeah,
Dave?
When I'm playing a game, and it's usually at a different resolution than my desktop, and I switch back to my desktop, it takes a while for the desktop to reconfigure to where it's supposed to be.
Yep.
And I was wondering, is it the video card that's lagging, or the processor, or why does it do that?
All the above.
Yeah, it's all of that. You can make that a little faster with a much faster video card, but the simple reality is that there's a heck of a lot going on back there.
Right.
And it just simply takes time.
Yeah, I usually have everything turned off in the background.
How much memory you got in the computer?
2 gigs.
And how much, what is your video card?
It's ATI 800.
Right. Is it built into the motherboard?
No, it's by itself.
And do you know how much memory is on the video card?
256.
That's an awfully good system.
Yeah.
I guess that's the best you're going to get.
Maybe the game not releasing the resolution back.
You might want to check with the game and see if there's any updates or patches for it.
Okay.
I see that a lot on my computer. I've got a 20-inch, computer, and so when my son plays his games, it's 640 by 480.
Yeah.
Rearranges the icons.
Right, and then I switch back to my desktop at 19 by 1200.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that was another thing, but at least on this one that I'm currently playing on the XP64, it keeps the icons intact.
It is just simply going to take time. Part of that is the bus between the video card and the computer. It's good enough for almost everything, but when you're pushing that much data that fast, it has to coordinate what's going on in memory with what's going on in the card with what gets pulled back from the hard drive. That's the other part of it. A lot of stuff will be pushed onto the hard drive in a protected area. That has to come back. Compared to everything else, that's glacially slow.
Right.
And again, there's not much that can be done about that.
It is what it is.
You could try changing the resolution of the game to more closely match the resolution of the that you really want it to run at.
Ooh,
but then the game will run slower.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Dave, I have to ask this question because, we're in Rochester where it's a sunny 34 degrees. What's it doing down there?
Let's see. I'm not at my computer right now, but I think it's around 70.
Okay, we hate you.
Yes, I know. But hey, that's why I moved here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I hope the spare bedroom is ready because I believe next month I'll be down.
Okay. Well, yeah, we do have a spare bedroom open.
All right. Thanks so much, Dave.
70 degrees, and he's playing games on his computer.
Yeah,
I don't understand.
Yeah,
exactly.
But they get that day after day.
Yeah, that's right. For them, 70 is cold. I have a friend who just moved down. His blood is thin already, and it's like, oh, my God, it was only 70 today. Shut up. Just
really?
Seriously, shut up.
He's on the southern shore of Lake Monroe, coincidentally enough.
There you go.
So there's a kindred here from us up in Monroe County.
Exactly. Our next caller is Clark from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Clark. What's your question?
Hi, about 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, we had a guy on who made a USB cable to connect two PCs, had the drivers and the cable.
Right.
What was the name of that?
The Tornado.
Yeah.
The Tornado.
TheTornado.com.
Exactly.
And they have a Mac to PC version coming soon. They're calling the iTornado.
And it works great. You literally hook it in between two USB ports, and it automatically finds itself.
It's a lot easier than setting up file sharing and running an Ethernet yourself.
Yeah, it sounds like a good thing. I just couldn't remember what the name was.
There you go. So PC to PC is the Tornado. PC to Mac will be the iTornado.
And all right, good enough. Thanks a lot.
There you go. Thanks.
Right. It is. I mean, I've got it, and it works fantastic. Pops open and tells you, this is the old computer. Up above is the new one.
Well, one of the tricks we run into is people who are upgrading from an old computer want all their email and their addresses moved over. Exporting stuff out of Outlook and Outlook Express is a pain.
Well, the best way I found to do to get all that stuff is just do the file and transfer settings.
Right.
You create that file, you copy that whole file over to the new computer, and then all your emails, all your photos,
all your... saying Tornado does it for you.
No, it'll move the file. Yeah, it'll move the file, but to get this all-in-one bundle like Steve is trying to do, if you run the file transfer setting, it gathers all those and puts it all in one neat little pile.
The problem is both Outlook and Outlook Express make a folder path under your local directory with some random series of hex characters.
So does Firefox.
Yeah, you can't just copy the files because that wouldn't work because it's looking for a different path.
Right.
So it's there are export tools.
It's
additionally complicated if you're switching from PC to Mac, because then you got to convert the DBX files into an MBOX, which is interesting. There's a free tool to go from Outlook Express to Mac. There's a pay tool to go from Outlook to Mac.
Yeah, of course. Look, if you're dumb enough to pay for Outlook, you're dumb enough to pay for a tool to transfer it.
Yeah.
All right, our next caller is Andy from Irondequoit. Welcome, Andy. What's your question?
I turn on my computer, I get the desktop, and I can click on Mozilla or Roadrunner, and it takes about 15 minutes to get to a home page. Once I'm on it, everything runs fine, but it takes 15 minutes to get online.
You get on Roadrunner?
The first time.
What is your connection? How do you connect to the internet?
Through a cable, Roadrunner.
Roadrunner.
Yeah.
I would check your DNS settings. That sounds like a DNS error, and once it knows the right DNS.
Or maybe it's got a bad modem.
Only the first time. Every successive page you load works normally?
Runs normal. Runs beautiful.
Yeah.
Let me ask, have you danced the security tango?
No, I'm using that CEA from Roadrunner.
That's not a bad thing. However, let me suggest you dance the security tango at securitytango.com.
I've got it in my bookmark.
Excellent. Click on the Let's Dance button, print out that page, follow every single step. And the reason that you need to do that is that it may well be that you've got viruses running in the background that will then try to get out of the way so you can use your machine so that you don't know they're there.
Okay.
But they may be doing something in the background you really don't want. So I would make absolutely certain that
I have run a virus scan and everything and nothing shows up.
Well,
it may not be a virus. It might be spyware.
That's why running the other programs are crucial, like the SpyBot and the Adaware.
Okay. Let's see. Any other questions? I have on the toolbar, two programs running. If I'm shutting down, it'll say two programs.
There you go.
No, it'll have two programs on the toolbar, and it would say you have three programs.
There you go.
There's a hidden program running.
That's it.
Probably
definitely,
spyware.
Definitely run the tango.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And before we get going at 43 minutes after the hour, Dave has his finger up.
I just got one quick request.
It's the index finger.
Yeah. The folks that are trying to sign up on the Soundbites forum, because like we were just talking, I'm literally getting hundreds of these junk requests a day to keep the folks literally that are trying to, advertise and all that other junk. I filter those out. But anybody signing up for the Soundbites forum, please, as far as in the location, actually put your city and where you're from, like Rochester, New York, because I'm getting so many bogus ones. They're easy to tell you know, that they're not. But there are some that, folks don't put that in. Just put in a city and the state. It'll make it a little easier for me to filter through the ones that are actually legitimate versus the hundreds that are bogus.
Because the ones that are bogus don't put in a city or state.
Oh,
or
they put in, you know, porn, India, you know.
Biwanagra.
Whatever, right. Yeah. Ukraine, Hungary, you know. So I just literally filter them all out.
Yep. All right, our next caller is Mike from Spencerport, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. Love your show.
Thank you.
Long time listener, second time caller.
There you go.
Got a question for you. Got a laptop for my son a few months ago. We just started college. It's an XP Dell. Nice laptop. And we're still running our Windows 98 SD desktop, which runs great. I know it's old, but it works well. And I've got a router set up. We recently joined up with Roadrunner, which is just a beautiful thing compared to dial-up. Love that.
Yeah.
What I've got is the Win98 is hosting an HP printer, and the desktop is connected to the router via Ethernet cable, and the laptop is to the router via wireless. I've got a network set up; it works fine, but for the life of me, I can't get the printer to work on the network.
Do you have it set up as being shared?
I can't. I've got it set up as shared.
What is your other machine?
The desktop is the Windows 98 SE. That's what the printer's connected to.
Yeah.
And the other machine is the XP, laptop with XP.
What brand and model printer is it?
It's a fairly new HP C. I don't have it with me. I think it's a C4130.
Is it one of the all-in-ones?
It's one of the all-in-ones, yeah.
There are specific issues with some specific HP all-in-ones that they cannot be shared over a network.
Okay, I do get an error message. When I can actually see the printer on the laptop, and when I click on it to use it, I see it says opening, and it just sits there forever, opening.
Yep.
It never finishes opening, and I get an error code. The data area passed to a system call is too small.
Yeah. Here's the problem. You've got a very old computer.
Yep.
And a very new printer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an all-in-one on top of that.
Okay.
When you put those three things together, there's not really a 98 driver for that printer.
Right.
Okay.
And consequently, I don't know that you're ever going to get it to work.
It may work the other way. Share it from the new machine.
Right.
I thought of doing that. I talked to a computer guy I know, and he gave me some things to try. I went to Microsoft Help. I tried everything I could, and everything seems to be set up correctly.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's just not going to work.
You're just fighting older technology.
Now, be aware that because you have an all-in-one, even sharing it the other way won't work. I have an older HP all-in-one. I can share it as a printer, but it won't do any of the other stuff.
Right.
I had to remove HP's driver.
Yep.
Use the regular driver from Windows and just tell it it's not an all-in-one. It's just the printer.
And some HPs are designed to be shared on a network, and the HP driver knows about the network, and it works as a printer and scanner
on the
network.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's more of an issue of all three and being an all-in-one.
You got
it.
Combination of all that. Okay. Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Keep up the good work, huh?
Thank you, Mike. Good luck.
You may have some luck if you purchase one of the USB Ethernet print servers. They're $30-$40, and you can hang a USB printer on your Ethernet, but there's no guarantee it'll work, so sort of try it and see what happens.
Get the IP address.
Yeah, and it's harder to configure.
All right, our next caller is Dar from Toronto. Welcome back, Dar.
How you doing, gentlemen?
Peachy, how are you?
Okay. Question about the big mega Java update with bug fixes and security stuff.
Yep.
Could you tell us punters how to install the new version of Java, and that includes for yours truly for Linux. Can you do the latest version of Java via Synaptic using upgrade?
That's a lovely question. Hold on. I've got 9 updates waiting for me. Let me see what they are.
Is that what, Java 6 release 3? Did that just come out?
Yeah, hold on.
Oh, they all seem to be that, don't they?
There we go.
Generally, you didn't install it like you'd install any other program, going to that website and downloading the installer.
Yeah, well, with my Linux uncapabilities, nothing happened.
Yeah, Linux has got those global go fetch me all my updates programs that are kind of neat.
Yeah, but it doesn't do Java quite all that well. What you ought to be able to do, however, is go to I think it's java.sun.com. Yeah.
/java.se/6 Java Standard Edition Release 6.
Okay.
And there's a button at the top that says get. Also, yeah, /downloads.
Right, and then you go to the downloads page, and you should be able to get anything you want for your runtime environment.
Release 4 just came out.
Yeah, release 4 just came out, and it isn't here yet, but Linux is listed, so you have to download it from there and then install it directly. Got to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave, Steve, Chris, Rob, Nick, 50 Minutes, Rochester, Soundbites, Wham, etc. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Our next caller is Dave on a cell phone. Dave, you're not driving, are you?
Of course.
Of course you are.
But I have my earpiece in.
There you go.
Just one quick question, and I'll hang up, is I don't understand what motivates people to do these viruses.
Right.
Outside of getting their galleys. Besides that, and then are there laws where they can go to jail for this?
That's yes.
My question.
Yes, there are. People write viruses for 100 reasons. Most of them nowadays are being written for money.
It was originally just for bragging rights.
Right.
Nowadays, it's not actually a virus. It's usually spyware or spam trying to steal information.
Right. And they're being written by professional people for money. And there are laws against it, but you have to catch them. One of the problems we're finding is that with the breakdown of the Soviet Union's, many of the people who were programmers there and many of the people who worked for the KGB were out of work and didn't have any work going. And then the bad guys over there formed something called the Russian Businessmen's Network and are writing viruses for pay. Not just viruses, but mostly spyware and stuff for pay. So that's the problem. We have laws in the United States that Russia simply does not recognize. So if we catch them here or anywhere that has reciprocity with us, then they can, in fact, be prosecuted. But otherwise, they're just free and clear.
And there's so many of them. Wasn't there just some guy arrested, you know, last week?
Yep.
Recently, and, you know, 100 people took his place. It's a lot like the drug cartels. In fact, it's pretty close to the drug cartel.
Yeah.
Well, there's also a big ring out of South Africa.
Right.
That was stealing credit card information. They had that on 2020, where they put up 3 credit cards with a $1,000 limit. First one took a half hour to max out. The other two, once they found they were legitimate, took less than 30 seconds to max out $1,000 on each one.
Yep.
And they were buying products and being shipped to South Africa.
Right. So that's the problem, Dave. It's big business. And anywhere there is money to be made, people will make that money. All right. Our next caller is George from...
Here's a picture of him. Alan Raisky, 52.
They can't see the picture.
I know. I'm talking.
Okay.
He was indicted last week on a spam scheme that netted $3 million.
Yep. That's
and with that much money
netted
stake,
$3 million.
Right.
Not nice work if you can get it.
Yeah.
Probably was only running for a day if it's only $3
million. Yeah.
Our next caller is George from Fairport, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Thanks, guys. A couple of weeks ago, you had a caller who lost their Yahoo email folders and contacts and all that, and you recommended that they back up that information. I didn't catch how you backed that up.
Well, theoretically, the way Yahoo Mail works and Google Mail and a lot of the web services, all your mail is stored on their servers, and they should be backing it up. So
yeah,
Yahoo,
we didn't offer a way to
that, and it wasn't. I just lost my train of thought. A user of Yahoo had lost her mail somehow. There was also another report we were doing where a mail service company accidentally deleted millions of people's mail. The big issue is that you'll have to download each one of those messages to your computer one at a time and then make a copy yourself.
All right, so there's no way I can back that up. It has to be backed up on their server.
Well, yeah, there is a way. You download each message one at a time and make a copy of it.
Oh.
It's just long and tedious.
Yahoo also does have a pop mail service.
Right.
I don't know if it's free.
No, you have to pay for the pop service, which does download the mail to your computer, and then you can back it up like any normal file. Their free service is web only, as far as I'm just started looking through it when I saw the question coming up. So it's there is a way to do it. It's just long and tedious.
So, right. Like for folders, how do you back up your folders?
You don't.
You
back up each individual message one at a time.
Okay.
Or you get a POP3 service, which then downloads all of your Yahoo Mail from Yahoo to your machine.
And how do you get a POP3 service?
You pay for it from Yahoo.
Okay.
And then what happens is you have all the email disappears from Yahoo and appears on your machine in files, which you can back up. And then you can use a program like Thunderbird
which
to read
is
your mail.
20 right. bucks a year gives you POP access to Yahoo.
Not a bad choice. We are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the mighty Chris Reich, who has once again generously donated his time and his talent and his equipment to creating the Soundbites archives. And, of course, Rob Linton, who took time off from his world jaunt through the Mediterranean or the Caribbean or the Antarctic or wherever the heck he was. To come
penguins?
Back and actually do the Soundbite Show. We couldn't possibly thank him any less. I'm Nick Francesco. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You now have approximately 6 hours, 5 hours before the Super Bowl starts, so plenty of time to brave the crowds and pick up your snacks. See you next week.